Were you present during the Tahrir Square demonstrations last year in Egypt?
Oh, yes, definitely. I was there from day one. But actually, the funny thing is that when we participated in the revolution, we did not expect that we are participating in a revolution, but it was merely a protest. January 25 is the anniversary of the police force in Egypt. Usually in these days, they have fun and have a vacation. So the plan was to give them hard time at that day and prevent them from having a vacation by going to the streets and making like some raids. So also the protest was actually a stand up for the dignity of Egyptian people who have been humiliated in police stations and by police in the street and everywhere over the past few years. So it was a great momentum what happened that day. I didn't imagine that this huge number of people will show up. It was really interesting to see around you. It's not just the same young activists, you know, it's not your friends anymore, but just people you met for the first time in your life. Like they look like they are from grassroots family or so, or they are not the same young people who are using the internet, but they are a different sector of the society that usually is not interested in participating. At that moment, when actually it was that moment when I saw a woman that is dressed in a way that tells you that she's less educated and she's coming from probably a poor family, at that moment I realized that it's going to lead to something bigger. So it already continued, like the first day continued to be the second day of the protesters, the third day of the protesters, and then Mubarak came up to speak to the people. Through his speech, actually, at that day, and the different reactions of the people that they did not 100% sympathize with him. Of course, some of them sympathized with him, but not 100% was with him. But the majority were, no, we don't want you anymore. The demand started to go higher. Not just we want to remove the police or the corrupt system, but we also need to remove the head of the regime. So it was perfect. At that day, I realized it's going to be a real revolution and we will copy what Tunisia has made.
As the protest turned into a revolution, to what extent was it a youth movement? Were most of the protesters young, say under 30 or under 35?
It is 100% a youth movement, definitely. In Egypt, youth represent more than 60% of the population. At least 80% of this 60% are using the internet. So through the internet, we were able to communicate, to speak with each other, to network with each other, and form this critical mass, if you can say, that would move things forward. And that's what happened. But here is another thing. Actually, we did not depend on the internet alone. The internet was a means of communication that the youth used to understand what they should be doing, use what are the nonviolent tactics that should be used, how to secure yourself, how to protect yourself, etc. And the maps and everything. But what really brought this large number of people to the square at that day was that there were an agreement on the internet between the people, young people communicating there, that you must tell at least 10 non-internet users about January 25. About the protest. And that's what brought this large group of people to the square, even if they don't use the internet or they don't communicate in the same way that the youth does. But there is a fact here. Youth were the leaders of the revolution, and especially the liberal youth.
Is there a consensus in the country today, in your opinion, concerning reform?
Yes, it's economic reform. We are in a country that have been going through a lot of economic problems recently. One, because of the corrupt system. Two, because of the lack of opportunities for young people or lack of access of young people to equal opportunities. So actually, economic reform is what everyone is looking forward to, because ultimately this is what will lead to social justice. And if you remember during the revolution, one of the main chants that were being said there was people calling for social justice. Social justice will happen through, first, economic reform, and second, a strong constitution that will guarantee civil rights and individual freedoms for everyone.
Well, last year, during the revolution, the military rulers of Egypt basically said they would not be an obstacle to reform. I mean, that was the sense, at least here in the U.S., we were getting, that the military was not really quashing the rebellion. And now, here we are a year later. The promised presidential elections are still set for June. But some pro-democracy protesters say, no, we want the transition to civilian rule now. So why the attitude shift? I mean, if the military has said it's going to happen in June and we want to do it deliberately and make sure everything is done according to, you know, the legal process.
Yeah, I know. I understand what you say. You know what? The thing is that there is a great sense of betrayal amongst the young groups of people who were there. The military is completely not doing what they were promising to do, either because they are not able, they are not trained on practicing politics, so it's lack of ability, or because they have certain plans in their mind. But it seems to me like they are pressured to act in a certain way. And I believe that the people in the prison now, like Mubarak and his men, are still running the show, but from behind the scene. See, for example, the violence that's going on now. I believe this is politically motivated to prove to the people what Mubarak has been claiming a year ago, like either me or chaos. And probably he's now trying to prove to the people that, okay, you let me go, but you see, it's chaos. See how you're going to deal with chaos.
But this is your suspicion. I mean, there's no concrete evidence that's come out yet that Mubarak is, quote-unquote, running the show.
That's true, but there are signs that can be leveraged or can be as credible as an evidence. Like, for example, Mubarak is not in a prison. Mubarak in a hospital, in a fancy hospital, actually, in Sharm el-Sheikh. And he's not in the prison. At the same time, he's meeting with his men every day. And they still have connections with people outside the prison who are still in the government and are still in powerful positions. So all this tells you that somehow they have a hand in what's going on.
Well, the United States, the Obama administration, is kind of in a tricky predicament concerning, well, not just Egypt, but the Arab Spring uprisings. On the one hand, you know, the official U.S. position is pro-democracy. But on the other hand, when you promote free elections, you know, you never know who might win. And as far as the United States is concerned, in a free election, the U.S., from our position, looking at our best interests, would run the risk of having an anti-American group, perhaps a radical Islamist group, gaining legitimacy. So it's an odd position for us to be in, because we almost have to talk out of...
Yes.
We have to say one thing but hope for another.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Actually,
no, it's true. This is something you have all the right to be worried about. And we in Egypt, as liberal young groups, we have all the right to be worried about as well.
And let me just ask this. In the most recent parliamentary elections, the Islamists gained dominance.
That's true. And I can also give you like an inside information about this as I was running for parliament myself. So on one hand, let me comment on the first part of the question about Obama. I met Obama in... I was invited to his speech in Cairo in 2009, and I met with his advisor, Valerie Jarrett, senior advisor in Cairo, privately after the speech. And we spoke about specifically the same things that happened that we are now seeing going on, like youth, the power of change and democracy and women, you know, and women rights and those issues. So... soon after, just a few months later, Iran had this great uprising. A year later, young people in Tunisia and in Egypt and in other places, and the whole Arab Spring happened, you know, started to revolt, and the whole Arab Spring happened. So this is, I believe somehow this model of the U.S. introducing democracy or showing a model of democracy to the people there helped somehow motivating them to take the step toward the Arab Spring, although even unconsciously, you know. So what's happening now? Okay, the Arab Spring is happening. Of course, as was expected, I would say that Islamists should be on the rise because they were always introduced to the people as the only power who were able to face the corruption of the regime. Although, in fact, they are not that... As they claim in the media, like being so powerful or being so a strong group of opposition. Actually, they are as any other group. I would claim that the civil liberal activists are much more stronger than them, And this has been proven during the January 25 when they refused to participate, the Islamists, in the protests from the beginning. And when they realized that it's going to win, or the people are going to win, they started to participate. So, you know, so somehow Islamists are very, very clever in exploiting the success of the revolution. Now the scene in Egypt is like this. Military is ruling from one side, and Islamists are ruling from the other side through the parliament and through being part of the government and all the committees, that decision-making committees in Egypt. This tells us that although the young people, the civil liberals, started the revolution, still the people in power now are dictators, but another form of dictatorship, which is military dictatorship, and it's not autocracy, as was happening during Mubarak time, but it's military and Islamism, or theocracy. Both of them are two types of dictatorship that requires from us another way to fight against them.
Well, the Muslim Brotherhood was restricted under Mubarak. And now that Mubarak is gone, they're allowed to open, to operate freely. I think they're now referred to as the Freedom and Justice Party, their political wing. And they've claimed that they're opposed to violent reform, but want to work through the political process. And, you know, you can believe them or not believe it. But they're also in favor of restricting women's rights, a woman's role in the political process. In fact, they've said that, you know, women can serve in parliament, but we can't have a woman president of Egypt. So as a woman in Egypt, do you fear their influence? I mean, are things going to get worse?
The status of women in Egypt is really horrible. Speaking about the Muslim Brotherhood and their rise now, women or Egyptian women are being crushed between two big stones. One is the patriarchal mentality of the society, and now is the rising Islamism or extremism. Both of those two big stones views women as like much less than men. Men are always superior to her, should be obedient to men, and so on. And accordingly, they believe that women should not be in any leadership position of any kind. The Muslim Brotherhood in the year 2007, they wrote a program of what they would apply in Egypt if they took over the country or if they were able to be in decision making. They wrote very clearly they will not allow a Copt, which is a Christian, or a woman to take any leadership position in the country.
What is your take on the latest conflict between the military rulers of Egypt and the U.S., where 19 Americans and several other foreigners have been referred to trial? These are people who have been working with nonprofits, pro-democracy groups in Egypt. They've been referred to trial as, quote-unquote, fomenting unrest in Egypt.
This is not new. Probably it's new here in the media, but it has been going on for years and years now. There is like a big distortion campaign against all the American organizations working in Egypt, including big organizations that participate directly in the economy of Egypt, like USAID, for example. This distortion campaign has been again going on, not through the military or through the Mubarak regime from before or so, not only through them, but also through the media, state-owned media, that enhances this idea again that they are bad people coming here to spy on Egypt or prepare for the big invasion of Israel and, you know, things like that.
You are the director of the American Islamic Congress in Cairo.
Yes.
Briefly tell me, what does your center, your group do? What are your activities?
The organization's main mission in particular is to promote tolerance between different groups, not only on religious perspective, but also in cultural. We have been working on three main topics: women rights, trying to find how to improve women's status politically, legally, economically, and on religious level as well. The second two important topics we worked on was nonviolent action and tactics. Nonviolent action and tactics, as you can see now, it's widespread everywhere in the Arab world. The third thing was the concept of civil rights, in particular, individual freedoms, like freedom of expression, freedom to use the internet, and freedom of religion.
It would be accurate to say, then, that the American Islamic Congress is a pro-democracy nonprofit, isn't it?
Yes.
And as such, then, would you be at risk for fomenting unrest in Egypt?
You know, we have not been touched yet, that's true, but still we are expecting this may happen like every day, and we are trying to take precautionary measures to prevent any harm that may happen to our team. But let me tell you one thing. We have been operating under the Mubarak regime. I myself was on the verge of arrest many, many times. And I was harassed many times as the director of the American Islamic Congress in particular as an activist in general. So we are familiar with this, you know. I mean, we can handle it. We can handle it no matter what happened.
Dalia Zayada is the Egypt director of the American Islamic Congress in Cairo. Ms. Zayada, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure to be with you.